Welcome to Organizational Theory. In many ways, this course is foundational to the others that you'll take throughout your program of study because it lays out a context for the setting in which you'll operate. Your textbook author states up front that most people are predisposed to dislike organizational theory. That may be less true of those of us who choose careers that require the study of organizations, although the author herself mentions that she was one of those people, and that this, in concert with her ultimate fascination with the field, is what inspired her to write the textbook that would not be painful. One point she makes is that there is no one unified theory of organizations, despite the name organizational theory. She provides a historical perspective with the caveat that one epoch or historical period does not replace the previous ones, which persist among some industries and companies, shows the influences of various fields from the social sciences, natural sciences, and humanities, and emphasizes the idea that multiple perspectives reflect not only the reality of the variety of theorists, but that of organizations as viewed from different angles. In other words, no one theory is adequate to explain everything that can be explained about complex organizations. She also makes the important point that basic assumptions that underline certain theories represent paradigms. She explains that concepts are buckets that allow us to generalize and fill with examples from our own experiences, and offers an overall conceptual model of organizations as composed of five circles, the largest being the environment, with culture, social structure, physical structure, and technology overlapping and overlaid within the larger environment, and presents a concise yet comprehensive history of organizations. Pay particular attention to the models, diagrams, and figures the text presents. They can help explain how industrial and organizational psychology clients conceptualize their organizations. They can also help you formulate your own mental models of organizations. Two. Last week, you got a good introduction to the various schools of thoughts that make up organizational theory, the idea that there are still multiple perspectives, and that organizations can and often are thought of or described in metaphorical terms. In this week's reading, Hatch presents some interesting contrasts between older and newer ways of thinking about structure, environments, and strategy. It is important to understand these views are all equally correct. Some of the organizations you may work with will hold one view, others another. Without having gained these multiple perspectives from somewhere, you might get whiplash when confronted with them by your clients. Hatch points out that this ambiguity is one of the reasons some students dislike the subject of organizational theory. In fact, you may have been attracted to IO psychology in order to help organizations get organized and clean up their messiness, and you may find it anxiety-producing to be learning about how things really are versus how they're supposed to be. But even if neatness is more in your comfort zone, many an organizational pundit has said it is important to understand how things are before you try to change them. And if you are a rare fan of mess, well, maybe you came to the right course of study. Three. This week we look at strategy. The Ployhart article makes a compelling argument that IO consultants do not pay enough attention to strategy, focused as they tend to be on individuals in small groups. Indeed, the latest edition of the Hatch textbook has eliminated the chapter on strategy. Yet, without an effective strategy, there is no possibility that the mission of improving the effectiveness of organizations and the well-being of individuals in the workforce one of PSYOP's core values can possibly be met. In the video, Porter makes the point that strategy is about what versus how, and you may have noticed that the terms goals and strategy often seem to be used interchangeably. In a previous edition of your textbook, Hatch explained this by defining strategy as a bi-directional link between the organization and environment, making the point that goals and strategy influence and drive one another. She also stated that while organizational strategists, that is, practitioners internal or external to an organization, think of strategy in rational, modernist terms, organizational theorists have begun to recognize postmodern, more contemporary approaches. This calls out an important disconnect, and sometimes even leaders of an organization have one view of strategy, while the organization itself appears to follow quite another. This contradicts the common idea of strategy as being, by definition, completely conscious and purposeful. Four, politics in organizations is often spoken of pejoratively, the little sneer, just as conflict, while inevitable, is often seen as negative. Yet the power upon which each is based is pervasive and necessary to achieving organizational goals. IO consultants, their clients, and every other organizational participant would do well to understand politics, power, and conflict. Power is defined by Dahl, page 254 of your text, as A has power over B to the extent that he can get B to do something that B would not otherwise do. Thus, power is relational and may or may not originate from a hierarchical position. Organizational conflict is a struggle between two or more units, and a curvilinear relationship between conflict and performance, meaning neither too much nor too little is optimal, has been suggested. And this has implication for the conflict tolerance of change agents, such as IO consultants and their clients. You had an opportunity to take a conflict style inventory that can tell you something about your attitude toward and means of dealing with conflict, as well as that of others. This information can help illuminate blind spots and improve your ability to optimally manage conflict. Five, this week's readings discuss the relationship between theory and practice, covering the interrelated ideas of design, change in learning, and knowledge management. These areas affect and are affected by each other. For example, design must be flexible and accommodate change, and learning and knowledge management both create change and are the result of change. Some examples of change trends with implications for these practice areas include globalism, corporate social responsibility, ethics, diversity and equity, environmental sustainability, and branding. It's important to note that others will likely emerge in the future based on changing demographics, economics, technology, and other environmental and structural forces. These types of trends play out in more complex and sophisticated ways over time, experimentation and dissemination of best practices. This process is an important basis for understanding change, as we will see in the rest of the course. Six, this week you will revisit some familiar concepts, including power, metaphor, structure, change, and history. Some of these you covered in your prior course, others in preceding sessions of this course. Of course, many facts will be the same. However, interpretations and emphases may differ. Please consider the review a reinforcement of important information and the differences as an equally accurate depiction of the multiplicity of perspectives in this complex field. If it were all completely straightforward, IO consultants wouldn't be necessary. Burke relates structure to pattern and process using the framework of the new sciences. This is a reflection of putting organizational change in the largest possible framework such that others can be subsumed within it, a big tent approach. You may have your own perspective that makes sense to you and you do not wish to abandon. That's fine, you don't have to. It's still important to know that significant others in your work life, clients, sponsors, the executive you report to, may have very different ones, and it's of little value to consider them wrong. It's better to hold your own views more lightly and be open to other perspectives that may prove illuminating and make your own larger and more encompassing. On the other hand, if you are looking for a perspective to ground you, the article by Orrig considers resistance to change. On the other hand, if you're looking for a perspective to ground you, the article by Orrig considers resistance to change empirically and from an individual perspective, and it may be useful to consider how this end of the spectrum relates to the theoretical macro perspective and how each influences the other. Seven. This week's reading makes a distinction between revolutionary or transformational change and evolutionary or incremental change. A metaphor often associated with transformation is the caterpillar that turns into a butterfly. It is not so much sprout wings as die to one form and become reborn in another. Some mergers or other reorganizations create transformational change. Incremental or evolutionary change can create powerful improvements, but is more measured and step-by-step, less fundamental. Automation of a process would be a good example. It's not inferior, just a different strategy with different consequences. Levels of systems offer different perspectives on change and help to explain the phenomenon of unintended consequences that sometimes occur when such levels are not taken into consideration. You'll also get a review of change research that shows how that has evolved over the past 25 years. Eight. This week's reading, in discussing theory, distinguishes between content, the substance, or the what, and process, the how, the method, in analyzing deliberate or incidental organizational change, and applies 10 relevant theories from behavioral sciences. The theme of multiple reality or multiple lenses persists. Discussions of practice include several frameworks. The text goes on to discuss several integrated descriptive models for understanding organizations, all which come from a combination of theory, practice, and research. Finally, Burke presents his own model, which, unlike the preceding ones, uses open systems theory to attempt to explain a cause and effect relationship that describes how alignment of the political and technical systems with the lever of mission and strategy affects performance and shapes change. These models are a lot to hold in your mind if you're not currently writing a paper about them or trying to apply them step by step to a real or clearly imagined organizational intervention. Fortunately, they'll always be there for you to refer back to, and new ones will continue to emerge. The theorists who came up with these put a lot of thought into them based on their own extensive experience and expertise. But believe it or not, as you do work in organizations, you'll actually come up with mental models of your own, and whether you share them explicitly with others, they will serve to inform your practice and create shortcuts that assist your thinking through complex organizational issues. At the same time, you should take care not to use your own models as blinders that inhibit your acceptance of data or the interpretations of other stakeholders. Nine, organizational culture has been explained a lot of different ways. The water that the fish swim in, how we do things around here, what gets rewarded. Someone famous, Shine or Lewin, I'm not sure, but they said the way to understand a culture is to try to change it. But Burke says to change it if you have to understand it, and the way to change it is not to try to change it. That is really clunky. Going to start this again. Nine. Organizational culture has been explained a lot of different ways. The water that the fish swim in, how we do things around here, what gets rewarded. Someone said the way to understand a culture is to try to change it. Burke says in order to change it, you have to understand it, and the way to change it is not to try to change it. One distinction that is very important is the ideal culture versus the actual culture. Another, which is not emphasized in your reading, is the importance of subcultures. In some organizations, they're more dominant than any overall culture. Shine talks about artifacts or symbols that we see on the surface of the organization, espouse beliefs and values, which related to my previous comment, do not always align perfectly with reality and basic underlying assumptions, which is the shared reality, often unconscious, which actually drives the behavior in the organization. I don't know what that sentence means. Okay, I think I know. All right. Shine talks about artifacts or symbols that we see on the surface of the organization, espouse beliefs and values, which related to my previous comment, do not always align perfectly with every other reality, and basic underlying assumptions. And it's the basic underlying assumptions that are the shared reality and are often unconscious, and it is this that actually drives the behavior in the organization. Burke presents a case, that of British Airways, which serves to illustrate his premise that the best place to start changing culture is with behaviors, and only then will the rest follow. Ten. We've covered a lot of territory in the past 9 weeks. You now have the opportunity to put it together and demonstrate what you have learned as you present your cases and practice your consulting skills, commenting on those of others. This will prepare you for the interventions course, where you will delve more deeply into managing interventions for organizational change.